Hi everyone, Eddie Santiago here. On this episode of National Board Conversations, we take a dive into the National Board Standards with Jamie Fowler White. She's a National Board Certified Teacher in Memphis, Tennessee, and an amazing storyteller. So without further hesitation, here's my conversation with Jamie Fowler White. All right, so welcome Jamie Fowler White. How are you doing today?
Good morning. I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Pretty well. A little bit going for a crazy time here at the National Board right now. But, you know, we're excited to talk to you. My friend Lisa here at the National Board talks about you a lot. And so I'm excited to finally meet you and excited to talk to you.
And you as well. I'm so excited to be here with you.
All right. So we'll kick it off real early. Could you just give us a little bit of an introduction of yourself, your role, your current job, and what you do?
Well, this is my 24th year in education. My first year is, I've coined myself as a pandemic principal. So it's my first year as a principal. Before becoming a principal, I spent 3 years as an assistant principal, 10 years as an instructional coach, and 10 years in the classroom.
Oh man, you've done about everything.
Yes. So other than that, I write books for educators, helping them to use reflection as a means of improving instructional practice. And I speak to educators around the world for that.
That's awesome. I mean, reflection is a big deal at the National Board, so we love it.
Absolutely. That is where I got my start, reflecting.
So can you share why you became a teacher?
Oh, accidental. So I'm the accidental teacher. I actually was going into nursing. I had gotten all of my foundational prerequisite classes done, and I had just gotten my letter to say that I had gotten into the Baptist School of Nursing in Tennessee, and figured out the college thing. You know, I was still taking that 8-to-3 day.
Oh man.
Yeah, like I was in high school. Yeah, it took me like 3 years to figure that out. Like, why are you scheduling all these classes at 8 o'clock in the morning? Like, you don't have to do that. Yeah. And so I had scheduled all my classes on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So I had Tuesday and Thursday off. And my sister was like, what are you going to do on Tuesdays and Thursdays? And I was like, sleep. I'm going to sleep. Yeah. That's what I'm going to do. She was like, well, you know, we are having the hardest time finding substitute teachers. So my sister had just taken a job as a third grade teacher in one of our local elementary schools. And she was like, you really should consider coming in a couple of days a week, you know, just to sub. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do that. But I had visited, love her school. They had such a family atmosphere that when you walked in, you just felt like you were at home. So I gave it a try, fell in love. With the children, couldn't wait for Tuesdays and Thursdays to come. I was there every Tuesday and Thursday, became one of the regular substitutes that they had. And after a couple of months, I went and sat down with my parents and I was like, so I think I want to change my major. And they were like, no, you're almost done. You have like a year. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I want to do that anymore though. I think I want to teach. And so I was like, you know, there are three girls in my family, and at one point all of us were in college. And so I talked to my dad and I was like, I only have a year left on my scholarship, but it's going to take me 3 semesters to complete these classes. I don't know how I'm going to pay for it, but I'm gonna get it done. And he was like, don't even worry about it. Just go ahead and get it done. And so, I took like 20, the maximum amount of hours. I took like 21 one semester, 24 another semester. And I had gotten down to where I only had like that, the semester where you have to do that, the clinical hours to actually get your degree. And I was like, man, I don't know how I'm gonna pay for this. But I had been volunteering in one of the offices on campus. And what I didn't know was happening was that the lady in the office was advocating for them to extend my scholarship for a semester. And so I got this random letter in the mail that said, hey, we're extending your scholarship for a semester. And I was like, where's this? I didn't know there was a thing. Like, and she came up to me, she was like, did you get your letter? And I was like, I got this weird letter that said that they were extending my scholarship for an additional semester. Like, I didn't know you could do that. She was like, yeah, I know. But I went and talked to them because you're almost done and this is what you were meant to do. And so thanks to her, oh my God, Miss Benita Lyons, I actually became a teacher. Absolutely love it. And the beauty was that some of the children that were in the room the first day that I was a substitute became my new students. So it was really awesome.
Oh man, that's such a great story.
Yes, it was beauty.
Happy accident.
Yes, I tell people about the importance of building relationships. Because had I been one of those mean, terrible substitutes, like what kind of first year would I've had, the first day would I've had on the job with those students? So yeah, because they all ran up to me and were excited that I was their new teacher.
So did you know about board certification prior to becoming an NBCT?
I didn't, but my sister took me to an interest session my first year. And I was so upset. I remember when I left, I was so upset because they said you had to be in education for 3 years, and it was my first year. But I, from the day after I went to that session, I began working towards. I said, "Oh, this is what I'm going to do." And at the time, there were like less than 300 national board teachers in our state, and I said, "I'm going to do that. That's what I'm going to be." And I worked for it. It took me exactly at exactly the 10th year mark. I made it. The first year I was a little disappointed. I missed by like 2,500ths of a point. And I remember having like a mentor, and she had read every entry except for that very last one. I was like, I got it. You don't have to read it. You don't have to read it. And that was the one that I didn't make the mark on. I called her, and after I got my life together, it was devastating because I had been working for 10 years for it. And I said, well, I'm gonna try again. I said, you don't really get information about why you don't make it, but when I read the entry, I knew. I said, I didn't answer the questions. That's what it was. I said, and after I make it, from then on, I'll make sure that I mentor anyone in the world who asks, because I don't want anyone else to not make it based on the fact that you don't really understand the process. And so once I made it in 2000, in 2008 and 2009, I started mentoring national board candidates, anyone within my district, anyone that emailed me, just to help. And they were like, you don't have time to do that. I said, I have time to do it because you need it. It's so important to have a mentor. And I didn't understand it until, and I tell them about like my story. I said, I didn't understand the importance of having a mentor until I didn't use my mentor in the way that I was supposed to. So I've been doing that. Even now, I'm still mentoring people. Because I know how important it is.
And they all better for
I
it. What were some of your initial thoughts when you dug into the standards of National Board? Like you jumped on them early, like you said, first year, I was ready to go. But
Well, so because I was just starting out and still getting my footing into education, I use that as well. This is what the best teacher is supposed to do. And so for me, it was like my roadmap. It gave me all those stair steps. And so from day one, my goal was to be an accomplished teacher. And so every standard I read, every aspect of it, every expectation, that's what I said, that is the goal that I'm shooting for. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. And so I don't know what kind of teacher I would have been without it. So I think every teacher, even if they're not seeking National Board certification, should actually read what an accomplished teacher should do and shoot for that. Because that means you'll be giving the best that you can to every child.
What role do the National Board standards play while going through the process?
Oh, the standards, especially like the core propositions, like they tell you exactly what you're supposed to be doing, like to know your students, every aspect of your students, to look at them for their individual strengths, the circumstances that they live in. You're supposed to use their interests, like everything about them. You need to get to know them, because you're merging all of their experiences with the content that you're teaching. And so if you don't have those relationships with them, you don't know about your data, you don't study your craft, when you stand in front of children, are you really giving them like the best that you can? And so every day you should give 110%. And I just think that everyone, it should be like a class that's required for all teachers, even just the introduction to it, so that we know how, just how important it is when we're building the future of our world. And if we're not at our best, giving our best, doing our best, then what will our future look like?
What did you learn about your students or your teaching practice by engaging in the standards? Like, what did you learn about yourself?
That is a really good question. Let's see. About my students, I had to really dig into what their lives were like outside of the classroom. My last year, the year that I certified, it was my first year teaching at my old elementary school. And so I went back. It's in the heart of Orange Mound, you know, the oldest African-American community in the United States. And they live a hard life. Like, school was the most stable environment that they had. I remember I had one student. He had siblings. He was the oldest, and he had like six siblings up under him. And he would just get into trouble like continuously, and because he was taking things, stealing. And I would ask him like, why are you doing that? He was like, well, I'm the oldest and they depend on me. And if I don't take some things, we're not going to eat. And you know, like stories like that just kind of break your heart. I just remember giving him food. I was like, you don't have to steal. If you need something, just let me know. I'll give it to you. I don't want you stealing. I want you at school, because he would be missing like for days. And I was like, I need you at school. And I just remember like that bond. Like, he hadn't really learned to read well. I was teaching fourth grade, and he started asking if he could stay after school. And I remember I was tutoring him. So that he was like, I really want to do better, Miss White. And I was like, I'm going to help you. And so from then on, I would stay like an extra hour after school. Because of him, I started doing like homework. I did a homework hour and told the parents, you know, you could just pick them up an hour late and I'll help them with their homework. Because you may not understand how to do the things, and I want them to do my homework. So instead of picking them up about 3:30, pick them up at 4:30, and we'll just do our homework in the room. And that way, when they go home with you, you'll have to do anything. They can do their chores, they can do whatever they want. Because like, they didn't have that. And that was like his refuge. And he actually went on and left and stayed in school. But I wonder if he had a different teacher that year, if he really would have actually continued. I don't know if any teacher would have really taken the time to get to know him, because I don't think they had before then. They just saw him as this disruptive child that came to school sometimes, that didn't do any work and did anything he could to go to the office every day because he didn't want people to know he couldn't read. So I think that's the difference that we make. And because I was working, and I had been working for 10 years, it would just became like an automatic thing that I would do for any child that I met, to make sure that I knew them like as a person, individually, and then I could use that and infuse that into everything we did in the classroom.
Your story's over here pulling at my emotional heartstrings over here. Oh man. What advice and tips do you have for educators getting into the standards and starting their journey on National Board Certification?
Truthfully, find a mentor. It's one of the hardest processes because you feel alone. I remember when I did it, I got like this box in the mail with all this stuff, and I was like, what am I supposed to do with this? What am I supposed to do? And now you get like a login, and it has like all this information. You're like, where do I start? Like, it's so much. Like, what am I supposed to be doing? So I would say to either get a mentor or seek out someone who actually has gone through the process, just because you need a support system, not because you can't do it on your own. Figuring out which area to certify in was one of the hardest for me. I didn't want to be boxed in, but being a generalist, so I'm a middle childhood generalist, was one of the hardest. It's one of the hardest certifications I've ever had. I had to prove that I was an accomplished teacher for any grade level between the ages of 7 and 12. So there's like second grade all the way through middle school. And I remember going through my school going, I need all these teacher editions so I can read all this stuff that I've never taught before so that I can have some type of context. And I did. I had my husband bringing books. I said, I need you to bring all your middle school books home so I can read them. And he was like, what? I said, I need to know this content. If I'm going to be specializing in this age group, like I feel like I need to study and know all this stuff. But it changes your mindset. And from then on, you're just as reflective as you want to be. You never depend on other people to tell you what you need to improve. It's just an innate thing in you, and you automatically do it. And so a support, even if it's not a mentor, just a support system, and take it one step at a time. Know that it's a process, so you may not get it the first time. Let me see. And never give up on your dream because you can do it. I think that would be the best advice, maybe.
Yeah, one thing we've heard is do it little by little. You're not trying to do it all at once. It'll take you down.
It will. It literally will. And it's not meant to be one and done. And so that's the hardest part because, for any goal that we've ever had, it's, oh, I must achieve it the first time. That's what we teach people. But truly, it's a process where you're supposed to learn from your mistakes. So it's really the quintessential part of education. Every time you don't make something or you don't meet that expectation, you're supposed to reflect on what could I have done better? What will I do better the next time? And that's the one thing that it truly taught me about education is that I'm supposed to learn from and reflect. So that's really good.
Do you think it's necessary to address all the standards in the components? In all the components?
As many as you can, yes. Because you'll catch every child. If you skip any of them that you can, so just think about if you don't know your content, but you know your children, then you're just in there having a conversation, but you're really not giving them what they need. If you don't know the data behind your children, if I hadn't have gone back to look and see that student who said, oh, please, can you help me learn to read? If I hadn't looked at his data to see which skills he had mastered, would I have been able to take him as fast as I could for him to see that he's making that progress? And so when you think about your parents and your community and collaborating with your colleagues, like you have to do them all. If you don't do them all, you're missing like an important piece of the puzzle, and so you don't want to not do them all. And I don't even know if I could at this point in my career not do them all. Even as a leader, I still see myself in that coaching role, that supporting role, to try to make every teacher use these standards, although they don't know that that's what they're doing. When you think about any literature that you read, it's already in there. They just don't actually give National Board the credit for coming up with these concepts. They just gave it a whole nother name, but it's really, that's what it is.
So we got a couple questions for you that are off the beaten path. So here we go, to take us off the beaten path and get to know you a little bit more personally outside of education.
Okay.
What kind of music was on your last playlist?
Oh, gospel. Ooh, I'm literally, this week is the second month of my pandemic principalship. Oh my goodness. So I have this gospel playlist that I play continuously. It depends on the day, which song I start with, but I listen to Tamela Mann, Kirk Franklin, Londa Adams, Ty Tribbett, like you name it.
Got some Elvis Sapp on there?
Yes, I do, because I never would have made it. Oh, sometimes there's that one you had to play some on.
That song, so,
yes, so so usually lately that is what I've been playing. That and some instrumental R&B. I've been infusing it into my lunchtime music for my students. I'll play a popular song, the instrumental version, and then I'll put a multiplication pack in there. There's a multiplication rap in there so that they don't know that they're learning while they're dancing during lunch. Yeah, gospel, definitely gospel. Because I need it right now.
All right, so what is your favorite kind of food?
Oh, I just love food in general. It just changes my whole world around. My favorite food. Which meal? Oh, my goodness. I literally love food.
Favorite breakfast food.
Oh, my favorite breakfast food. Oh, I love a big breakfast. So I like bacon, eggs, pancakes and waffles. That's actually what I had a couple of days ago. Our first day here in Lake Hamilton, I ordered Cracker Barrel. Yes, it was best day ever.
All right, last one, and then we'll get out of here. What hobbies outside of education do you have?
Hobbies? I write. It's my self-care, and it doesn't even matter. I have a blog where I literally just sit down and write. I used to color. It's kind of soothing, like one of those color by number apps. I used to do that one for recolor. I do puzzles because I think puzzles are like life. You just take it one piece at a time. Before you know it, you put the whole thing together. So puzzles are my go-to. Let's see. Other than that, vacationing, I love it. I think that everyone should take a trip as often as you possibly can. It relaxes you and takes your mind off the world. I was going to do my podcast outside, but my sister stole the upper deck and they're very loud. Where I could see Lake Hamilton behind me. Yes, I think those are my four biggest hobbies.
Awesome. Well, this was great. I'm glad we got to talk. I got to know so much about you. I got to hear some of your story of why you became a teacher, which this whole conversation has been kind of emotional and got me over here. So I'm like, man. But this was awesome. I'm happy to have talked to you. Thank you again for your time, and we'll hopefully do this again.
Oh, absolutely. I really enjoyed it.
What a great and useful conversation with Jamie. I just want to thank her again for taking the time to chat with me, and thank you for listening to National Board Conversations. Be sure to follow us on social media to keep up with all the National Board updates. Hit that subscribe button on your podcast platform of choice, and we'll see you next time.